Welcome to Croxley Green Baptist Church Sermon Podcast.
So some of us were old enough to remember this. I was just about old enough to remember this. I was 9. Interesting, I got the scrapbook out of the loft the other day. I've got a scrapbook from that age and the years after that, and with all the cuttings of the Apollo missions, the later Apollo missions in. But my dad, I saw my dad last weekend, and he said, yeah, I got you up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch it, which is really, you know, quite special, really. This event inspired me. It inspired me on a path of life, which, you know, was my professional life for nearly 20 years. And it continues to inspire me in my faith life. Funny, I had to go down Kirkby with my dad last Saturday for some things, and we ended up in the library there. My dad built the library. And we went to the little corner of the adult library where the science books used to be, and lo and behold, it's still the science section. They're not quite as technical as they used to be 50 years ago, but it's still there. I used to spend a lot of time in that library. One small step. Oh, hang on. Would you like to see the moment? Yeah, why don't we see the moment? This is, now I have to say, this picture is rather better than I remember it, but it's still a bit fuzzy because they've cleaned it up over the years. Okay, so this is Neil Armstrong setting foot on the moon. You need to turn the volume up on the video feed. Here we go, that's great.
Buzz, this is Houston. F2, 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera.
Okay. I'm at the foot of the ladder. The limb footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. I'm going to step off the limb now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
There you go. That's all you're getting. I'm sure there's lots of other programs you can watch it on more fully today and over the last week. Those words that Neil Armstrong spoke, one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, have kind of become iconic in history. They are remembered 58 years later. And there's a long debate whether Armstrong fluffed his lines. There's a bit of a debate whether he pre-prepared to say those words, or whether he thought them up on the day. Armstrong later in his life said he thought them up on the day. His brother, who visited him a week before he set off for the moon, said that late one night they played a game of Risk. You know the board game Risk? World domination game? And during the game, Armstrong slipped his brother a slip of paper with those words on, said, "What do you think of this?" And so we don't know. And we don't know whether he fluffed his lines or not. He said one small step for man. It might have made more sense if he'd have said one small step for a man. Well, who knows? Armstrong was known as a man of very few words. I saw an interview last night with his parents on the day he landed on the moon, and the interviewer asked them, Do you wish Neil had said more? And his father replied, well, we've got used to him saying not much. But when he does speak, it's worth listening to. I guess those words are worth listening to. This was the first time human beings had ventured off the planet Earth and landed on another solid body in space. That had been something that people had looked up at the moon and dreamed of since ancient times. By the way, did you see the moon this morning? No. This morning, as I was walking to church, the moon was up. It was over there in the sky. It's quite faint in the daytime, but some people, you can see it still. People have dreamed of going there since ancient times. In the 2nd century AD, a Roman writer, Lucian, wrote a story about a ship being lifted up by a giant water spout and transported to the moon. And through later history in the West, there have been stories about ships being taken to the moon pulled by a flock of swans through the heavens. This was a massive moment. In some ways, this was a giant leap technologically, in adventure, in exploration for mankind, for humankind. And whether he got his words right or not, I don't think matters, because what you get a sense in him speaking them is a sense of quiet humility in them, a small step. Some went out to the sea in ships. They were merchants on mighty waters. Oh, words that go back over 2,000 years. That was just a riskier thing to do 2,500-3,000 years ago, as going to the moon was 50 years ago and is today. Especially for a people like the people of Israel, they hated the sea. They hated the sea. They weren't a seafaring people. There were other nations around them that were, the Phoenicians especially, but they were a land people. In their theology, as you read through the Bible, they had this impression. They used the imagery of the sea to represent the power of evil. Everything that opposed God is depicted in the roaring and the mighty waters and the massive waves that you could find there. They had a sense of fear about the sea. And yet there is a sense of confidence too in this statement, isn't there? They went out on the sea in ships. They were merchants. They had purpose. They had vision. They wanted to do something. They had a dream, a goal. And yet before the power of creation, they had to learn humility. They cried out to the Lord in trouble. In the midst of the storm, they turned out to God for their salvation. Armstrong was a remarkable human being in many, many ways. You know, very good pilot, sharp visual skills, quick reaction times, quick thinking, very intelligent man, physically very fit. And when he got back to Earth, he didn't seek to hang on to the fame of the event. He tried to hide it away. He went back into teaching in university and then into industry and engineering. He really talked about this moment. He struggled with it, perhaps, the fame that it thrust upon him, the adulation that people wanted to give him, until perhaps the later years of his life when he did talk more about it. Perhaps we all do that as we get older. Talk about the events of our younger years. And I think, you know, when they choose the crew for this mission, I think they did well to choose a person such as Armstrong for this moment. You can imagine some might have gloried in the fame of it through the rest of their lives, but not him. And I think maybe there's a lesson here for those of us who, well, for all of us, but for those of us who seek to lead. We live in a world where people constantly seek celebrity, who constantly think they should be in the limelight and try and take quick and easy ways to get there. No going to the moon, just go down to the studios at Wembley and sing in front of a panel of four judges. And maybe, just maybe, you'll be a star. You'll be a celebrity. People want to be a celebrity without effort and energy and working for it these days. And we live in a world where leaders seek to big themselves up, don't we? Make a great America great again. I will bring the United Kingdom back together. Fat chance at the moment. And yet people will believe it. And we live in a world where often, even in church life, the big is often highlighted over what it seems so ordinary and yet which is still soaked with the presence and the purpose of God. We fall into the same trap. And yet when we look at this big rocket, and it was big, and it was powerful, we need to remember that all things are small and passing compared to God. It took a big rocket to get three people to the moon, two people onto the surface, and all of them back safely to the earth. But as I said earlier, it seems that Armstrong was well aware of the 400,000 people who worked on the project. When we were in Dublin a few weeks ago, Carol and I, the girls went to see Westlife. And me and Carolyn went to the pictures to see the documentary Apollo 11. And there's a picture of Buzz Aldrin leaving, of Aldrin, Collins and Armstrong leaving quarantine. They had to be in quarantine for 17 days, just in case they brought any deadly diseases back from the moon. And as Armstrong left, they asked him to say something. And he said, well, I wouldn't have chosen to spend 17 days here. But I'm very grateful for the thousands of people who work here, who have made it as good as it could have been. He had in mind the bigger picture and that he was only one small part of a bigger plan. And it was a long way to go. I think when they set off, the moon was quite close to the Earth, 218,000 miles. But that's small. It seems big. It took them 3 days to get there, but it's small compared to a vast universe. It takes a quarter of a second for light to travel to the moon. It takes 20 billion years for light to travel to the edge of the universe. This is a big human achievement, but it is small compared to the works of the Lord. And you might ask, why go to the moon at all? Why bother? Why? When there are seemingly more important things to talk about, hunger and poverty and clean water, international tensions, why go to the moon at all? Why waste all that money just to do this? And at the time, some civil rights groups in America complained about that. They complained that their communities were in poverty and their children were hungry and they had no health care. Well, nothing changes much in 50 years. In fact, President Kennedy, when he set this goal of America sending people to the moon and bringing them back safely, in his speech, his classic speech, he asked that question, why go to the moon? Why go to the moon? Now, I personally think it's pretty exciting going to the moon. And it thrills me still. I had a ball yesterday morning building this rocket. I'm just trying to figure out if I've got enough time to build the lunar lander this afternoon after the picnic, but I'm not sure. I think I might have some other things to do. But, you know, put the, childhood enthusiasm and idealism to one side, and I, to be honest, I haven't totally done that in a lot of ways. Peek behind the curtain of idealism. And the reason the Americans went to the moon was to beat the Russians. It was all part of the Cold War, to show the world that America was first, that it could be great again. Does that ring any bells, by the way? Make America great again. And there was this desire, and he said it in his speech, there was this desire for a big vision to bring people together at a very turbulent time in the nation's life. Are we talking 50 years ago or now? And it did, for a while, bring people together. Kennedy actually, although he threw out that question, if you listen to the speech, he never answered it. But he was a politician. They're not very good at answering theirs or anybody else's questions, are they? Well, at times. But he did say this. He said, well, you know, why go to the moon? Why climb a mountain? Why climb the highest mountain? Why 35 years ago did somebody fly the Atlantic? There's something very human about going beyond what we know and what we're used to. We have an inquisitiveness and a curiosity that drives us forwards. I guess that's why human beings as a species have peopled the entire planet, because when those first people took their steps beyond what they knew, they wanted to know what was in the next valley and the next valley. We are explorers. We're inquisitive. And that captures something about this statement in the Bible about being made in the image of God. It captures the being of God. Because God goes beyond his own being in creating the cosmos, in making the world, the stars, the planets, the moon, the universe. And something of that reaching out and going beyond is part of who we are. We are made in the image of God, and we're made to explore the wonder of creation. They saw the works of the Lord, it said, of these old sailors of old. And we need to be open to that, to be fully human, to understand something about the being of God. At the end of this psalm, it says, let the one who is wise heed these things and ponder the loving deeds of the Lord. As we look at creation, there is wisdom there. An ability to encounter God. And I think this says something about our faith journey too. I don't think we should ever be settled for what we have in our journey of faith. I think the longer I go on, the more I think it's about what you don't know. And exploring that. I heard Bear Grylls on Radio 2 this morning. It's Colin Abbiss's 80th birthday this week, and I forgot to buy him an 80th birthday card. We gave it to him in the first service. I have trawled through every little shop and post office and news agency in Croxley trying to find an 80th birthday card. And I should have just gone to the top of the road, because that's where I found it in the end. But I heard Bill Grylls talk. Now, he's an adventurer, isn't he? He's an adventurer. Yeah, I heard him talking about his faith this morning. Not very loud about his faith, but it's there and it's real and it's vital to him. He's a man who wants to go beyond what is known. I think that's something we need to do in our faith. You see, faith is not about a moment when you become certain, but it's a journey of becoming with God in the face of the unknowns that we face in life. And sometimes we need to make a choice to go in the unknown, to go beyond what we have known and felt secure in. And God invites us to do that. And in that unknown, we find he is there. And we discover more things about him. Other times, though, it's forced upon us. We have no choice because of the difficulties of life. And thrust into them, we can still discover God is there with the resources that we need to bring us home. Faith is a risky journey, just like the moon journeys. Karen and I left that cinema in Dublin, and we both said to each other, it's amazing, it just didn't blow up on the pad when it launched. We just thought there were so many moments in that journey to the moon and back where it could have horribly gone wrong, and it did two missions later. two missions later on Apollo 13. It was a risky business. President Nixon, he did a phone call to the astronauts on the moon. We now know he had another speech. If they didn't get off. It was risky. But it gave us a new sense of a glimpse of wonder, didn't it? It helped us to see the universe in a new way. And in the uncertainties of life, I'm increasingly understanding that that experience of wonder that we get through creation is part of God's reassurance to us. I mean, I've been reading Job for decades now, especially the last bits of Job. I even quoted a bit of that at the start of my PhD thesis 40 years ago, or 35 years ago, about the clouds. Who can count the clouds? Well, a little bit. But I never really understand Job in many ways. I never felt God gave Job an answer. I've heard people give talks on Job and say, oh, well, Job's about understanding suffering. I don't think Job's about understanding suffering. I think it's about expressing our angst over suffering and our not understanding suffering, but I don't think there's an answer to suffering there. And in the end, when God does answer, all he says is, look at the clouds or look at the stars. And I've always thought, that's a very strange answer. I had to write a little piece for some Bible study notes that's coming out in September. In fact, I had to write two because I got the wrong passage. So I had to rewrite one on Genesis chapter 2. But I'd written a little piece for the Bible Reading Fellowship on Job, one of the chapters in Job. And I'm glad I did because I kind of felt I understood something more about why God answered Job the same way, that way he did. And I saw it again when in that passage John preached on last week in Habakkuk. Israel in the face of terrible times, and yet God says, look how amazing the world is. And I think the fact he says that to us says something about his love and care for us in the midst of the difficulties of life, in the adventure of life. He says, look, I've made this, and I want to share it with you. It's wonderful, isn't it? Trust me. If I care for this, I care for you. You don't understand this, and you may not understand life, but trust me. Trust me. I'm pretty thick. I should have seen this ages ago, because isn't this what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7? Look at the flowers. Look at the birds. Will God not clothe you more? Trust me. Trust me in the risk of faith, in the adventure of life. But it's not just about the adventure of going to the moon. It's about an inner adventure as well. I mean, this inspires me still. And as I look at it in my lounge now by the fireplace, you know, a big smile is on my face. I was at my friend's funeral on Friday, and a lot of us who were close friends of Rob were scientists, and this inspired us to choose science, amongst other things. And talking to a lot of people he worked with at BA Systems, this inspired them as well to do science. Whether they did space science or whatever, this was an inspirational moment. This was one giant leap for mankind. That was true. But I think over the last 50 years, I've learned that you need to pay attention to another journey as well. And that's the inner journey. That's the inner journey. They left this plaque on the moon just behind the steps of the lunar module. Here, men, people from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind. we came in peace for all mankind. People, as I said, people even at the time said, why are we doing this? Isn't it just so expensive? Aren't the problems back here on earth that we need to solve? And in the end, those voices won out. And the program was scrapped. So Apollos 18, 19, 20 and 21 never happened. It was expensive to do this. In today's money, it costs $150 billion, spread over about 12 years. That's about $12 billion a year. You could do a lot with $12 billion a year, couldn't you? But put it in some perspective. The American defense budget this year is $693 billion. This was 2% of that. And I think something of the idealism of Apollo has had a lingering legacy through the years. There were no weapons on the moon. And actually, the nations of the world agreed to not put weapons into Earth orbit or on any other planetary body. And that has held for the past 50 years. It's looking a bit shaky at the moment. All of them are starting to develop weapons to destroy satellites in orbit. But for 50 years, something of the idealism of this mission held. There's talk of returning to the moon. President Trump wants them to go back in 2024. I'll really be surprised if they do that. The Chinese are talking about 2030. And some of the same motivations are there as it was in the old days, the macho posturing of nations, actually the macho posturing of the world's richest men in Elon Musk and the guy who owns Amazon. They run the two rocket companies which are talking about going back to the moon and Mars and beyond. And there's a commercial motivation as well for these businessmen because there are resources out there which may allow further things to be done outside and beyond the Earth. But I wonder if that plaque will still be in place and holding in 50 years' time. A big vision draws people together for a while, and this project did draw America together for a while. But a big vision needs an inner vision to match if it's going to be sustained. And if not, then it becomes just a smokescreen to distract you. And that's true of nations and individual lives and churches as well. You need to match the big vision out and in. There's a need to know peace within. That peace that was hoped for the moon needs to be something we need to know within. They cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the seas were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm. And he guided them to their desired haven. We need to know the inner peace of God in our lives. We need to know the Prince of Peace. You don't have to go to the moon to discover that. You don't have to go to the ends of the earth. You can know that here and at home. On all your travels. You don't need to be an astronaut to have a vision for a bigger inner being for yourself. But you do have to look to God. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. We need to look to him in our lives. And I want you to just reflect a little bit more on what happened 50 years ago today. Hopefully you've all got your little footprint there. This is Neil Armstrong's footprint. Buzz Aldrin took this snap on the moon. I mean, you might think it's a bit boring to take somebody's footprint in the mud, but it was actually an experiment. It said something about the moon dust and how cohesive it was and how it held shapes and things like that. So you can tell a lot from a footprint. And we're gonna kind of have the band play a song, and I think the words are going to be on the screen. So Alex and Sarah, could you be ready for that? We're going to sing just a very quiet song by Matt Redwin, When the Music Fades, All is Stripped Away. And I want to invite you, if you feel it's right for you, as we just listen to that song, sing it, I want to invite you to think about one small step. What's a small step you might want to take today? Is it a step of humility? Recognizing the greatness, the lordship of God? Is it a step of trust in the uncertainty of the journey, the voyage, the adventure of life? Or do you need something more of that inner peace, that calmness that God brings and God gives in Jesus? So if we stay seated while we listen to this song, but if you feel you are called to make a small step today, in whatever way, I just invite you to come and place your footprint on the floor in front of the rocket on the stage as a sign that you want to take another step on the adventure of faith and life with God.